Welcome to today's quarterly All Employment Network call. My name is Derek Shields, and I will serve as the moderator for this All-EN call. Before we begin with our agenda and the presentations today, I'd like to first review a few logistics and housekeeping items. First, this meeting is being recorded, and a transcription is also being captured. Now, let's move to the logistics. These items are on the screen, and I'm also going to review them. Please remain muted at all times during the call, unless we call upon you as a moderator or facilitator. Please feel free to ask a question in the MS Teams chat section, which will be monitored by SSA and the ticket program manager. Or if you wish to ask your question aloud, please raise your hand and your mic will be unmuted by our facilitator. If joining via telephone, and you wish to answer a question, it's a two-step process. First, raise your hand utilizing star 5, and you will be unmuted by our facilitator. Next, the second step is then press star 6 to unmute yourself. Again, that's star 5 to raise your hand and star 6 to unmute yourself if you're calling by telephone. If joining via MS Teams and you wish to ask a question out loud, please raise your hand and please limit questions to one participant. Additional questions or comments can be sent to enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Those questions that aren't answered during our live event will be forwarded to the appropriate panelists for comment and response. Closed captioning is available for all participants who join using the MS Teams application or utilizing the separate closed captioning links provided. To turn on closed captioning in Teams, go to the three ellipses that are part of the menu bar at the top of the MS Teams window and click on More Actions, and then go down the list to Turn on Live Captions. When using the link option, paste the link in the browser and it will open up a separate window to you to view the closed captioning. And that link was just posted in chat as well. So with those logistics done and the options in chat, I'd like to transition to the next slide, please. Today's quarterly All-EN call is scheduled for 90 minutes, and we'll have about 1 hour presentations followed by a 30-minute Q&A. On this screen, we have our call agenda. First, Social Security updates. Next, a presentation from the Federal Communications Commission, followed by EN updates and reminders from Social Security. That will be followed by two guest presentations, one from Direct Employers Association, and the next followed by an employment network, Advance to Work. Finally, we'll have an update from the ticket program manager on communications and outreach. With that, that's our agenda today. And I would now like to move to the next slide so we can begin. Today, for our Social Security updates, we were scheduled to hear from Mr. Robert Paff, Director of the Office of Employment Support. Unfortunately, Mr. Paff has been drawn to another requirement. And so today, it is now my pleasure to introduce to you Ms. Kara Kaplan, Branch Chief for the Office of Employment Support. Kara, over to you.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the All-EN call. I would like to let you know that we have some new ENs, and our EN team works really hard at reviewing proposals, and not everybody gets accepted into the program. So I do want to welcome our new ENs. They include Boone Center Incorporated, Rocket Science, DK Employment Services, Pueblo Diversified Industries, and BNAFSH Inc. And welcome. And I know you all got a welcome letter from our employment network team, and anything you need, you can reach out to them for. Back to you, Derek.
Thanks so much, Kara. We appreciate your introductory remarks and welcoming the new ENs to the program. With that, if we can transition. Yes, thank you very much. I am now pleased, as I mentioned, to introduce our guest from the Federal Communications Commission, Ms. Chantel Virgil. Ms. Virgil is the Consumer Education and Outreach Specialist at the Consumer Affairs and Outreach Division of the Consumer and Governmental Affairs Bureau at the FCC. Chantel will be presenting on the Affordable Connectivity Program. We've mentioned this in the past, and maybe you've seen some material, but what we're really looking forward to is this presentation by Chantel to go into some of the details and to help you be able to connect folks to the program. And with that, I'd now like to turn it over to Chantel.
Thank you, Derek, and thank all of you for giving me this time to give you some information about the Affordable Connectivity Program. As Derek said, I'm an outreach specialist at the FCC, and it is quite all right if you don't know what the FCC is or if you haven't heard of us. Many people haven't. But in a nutshell, the Federal Communications Commission is responsible for making sure that telecommunication devices and services are available to everyone. I'm here to share with you guys a awesome program called the Affordable Connectivity Program. And we're just going to jump right in and I'm going to tell you about it. So next slide. Okay. I'm not seeing my next slide. Oh, there we are. Okay. So we're just really quickly going to talk about what the benefits are, who's eligible, and how households can apply. Next slide. And what you'll start to see is this program will more than likely impact a lot of the people that you are that you are working with in the community. Okay. And so we need your help to try to get this information out to the folks that can benefit from this program. So the Affordable Connectivity Program is an FCC program that provides a discount on your monthly broadband bill, your monthly internet bill. And this is for low-income households, okay? So households that are eligible to receive the ACP benefit, they would receive up to $30 a month off of their monthly internet bill. That's up to $30, okay? If that household is located on tribal lands, then that discount can jump up to $75 off of the monthly internet bill. And then there's a second part of this benefit. The second part of this benefit is a one-time discount of, here we go, up to $100 off of the purchase of a laptop, desktop, or tablet computer. The most important thing to remember about any of these discounts is that it must be accessed by a participating provider. So most people think they're going to be able to go to their local retail store and somehow get a rebate or get the benefit that way. But that is not how this program works. It is strictly through a participating provider, a provider who is offering the Affordable Connectivity Program. Next slide. So now that we know what the benefit is, now we need to know who's eligible. And this is when I really need you guys' participation and just putting on those thinking caps and recognizing that that you all more than likely will represent the men and women who can possibly be eligible for this program. Okay, so let's talk about eligibility. One way for a household to be eligible is through their income, right? So if the household income is at or below 200% of the federal poverty guideline, then that household would be able to participate in the program. But that's not the only way to be eligible. Let's say the household is not eligible through their income. Well, that doesn't count them out of the program just yet. Other ways that they can participate in the program is if at least one person participates in at least one of the following programs. So listen up for these eligibilities, because I'm pretty sure that the people you represent participates in at least one of these programs. Programs such as SNAP, Medicaid, SSI, WIC. If someone in the household participates in the Lifeline program, There are some tribal programs that are listed here. If you have a student in the household that receives free or reduced school lunch or breakfast, then the household would be eligible. If you have a student that receives a Pell Grant for the current award year, then the household would be eligible to receive this discount. There are other veterans pension benefits, and other eligibility criteria. And if one person within that household reaches or participates in at least one of these programs, then they would be eligible. Okay, so we can go to the next slide. So now that we know that we can get a discount off of our internet bill, we know that more than likely, you know, we participate in one of these programs. The next question is, how do we apply? Well, there's two ways to apply. There's applying online, where you can go to www.affordableconnectivity.gov and you can fill out the information, you can fill out the application as well as get you know, additional information about the program. You can also print out a mail-in application and do it that way. If you don't have access to get the application online, I would suggest folks to go to their local library. The library is a very good resource for accessing broadband services and getting to the application that way. Okay. There's one thing to know about applying. So let's say I apply, I qualify, and I get a notice that I qualify for the program, I'm approved to participate. The next step is for that household or my household to contact a participating provider and say, hey, I've been eligible to participate in the program, I've been approved, what are the next steps for connecting to a plan, a service plan? Okay, so that's the next slide. So now you know about the Affordable Connectivity Program, okay? And that was information that I need you all to pass on to the men and women that you represent every day, okay? And we have ways of helping you do that, okay? You can give you can ask for a presentation such as this. We're waiting, you know, every day to receive some sort of email letting us know, hey, you're having a meeting today or, you know, in the future, and you would like a presentation similar to what I'm giving you now. You can get a general presentation, a train the trainer, or if you all would like to help with enrollment in your community, we also give you support with that. And the information is on this slide that can be available to you all at any time. Next slide, please. Okay, so I just wanted to show you all that we have a toolkit available. You do not have to write this information down and somehow get it to the people you think would be eligible for the program. You can go right on our website and download any of our printable, downloadable information, and you can pass the information along with, you know, a flyer or fact sheets. It's free of charge. You can give that information that way. Okay. So you go to fcc.gov/ACP and you'll be able to follow the instructions there and you'll have access to all of our toolkit information. Next slide. There is one other thing about our toolkit that I am so incredibly proud of. So right now we currently have 338 people listening to the sound of my wonderful voice. And let's say that each one of you all, now 340, know at least 10 people that could benefit from this program, or you have, you know, hundreds of people that can benefit from this program. You can request a print job of any of those toolkits that I just mentioned. On your screen on the right-hand side, you'll see one of an example of one of our flyers. That is flyer one. And what you can do is you can send me an email and say, Chantel, I need this flyer or any other flyer that you see on our toolkit. I need this amount of copies in these available languages, which we have a lot of different languages. And I need it shipped to this particular location. And we will try our best to honor your request, your print request, at no charge. This program has been going on for quite some time, and we've been able to honor most if not all of the requests. However, there's paper shortages and everything, so sometimes we can't guarantee that we'll meet all requests, but we've been doing a really good job. Next slide. So I definitely want you all to think about that. That's my resources page. Whenever you see this page, that means we're at the end of my presentation. This is just some of the resources that you that would be helpful to you with filling out the application or finding out more information about the Affordable Connectivity Program. All right, so that ends my presentation. Thank you so much for your time, and I hope to hear back from you soon.
Thank you very much, Chantel, for your presentation. And at this point, we will now take a break to answer any questions, as Chantel is our guest. Brittany has dropped the link for the Affordable Connectivity Program into the chat if you're interested in accessing that. We also have instructions for how to ask a question, so I'm just going to bring that back now. For participants joining us through the Teams app, please enter your question into chat or use raise your hand. To ask a question over the phone, please raise your hand on Teams by hitting star 5 and you will be unmuted. And then again, press star 6 for the two-step process. That will allow us to have you speak aloud. So if you have any questions about the Affordable Connectivity Program, please go ahead and provide those now. Chantel, you're getting some thanks in the comment box for your time and for the program, I believe. I do want to take this moment. I know there's been some chat about being able to see the slides or being on the right slide, and Catherine will continue to put in the slide number. If you had advanced it, then that will allow you to go. So we have a question here, Chantel. Do you have materials in alternate formats, any brochures potentially for the blind, like brochures in Braille? Does the ACP program have materials in alternate formats?
We do have materials in alternate formats. We do have a video actually online where we do have a staff member interpreting in the ASL language. But if you see a document or any information that you would like and you do not see it in the format that you need it, you can definitely send that request to me and I'll make sure it gets into the right hands and we'll try our best to make those accommodations.
Great. Thanks, Chantel. So there are multiple formats available. And earlier, Brittany posted in chat Chantel's email address, chantel.virgil@fcc.gov. So just go back in the chat history so you can access that. Chantel, another comment from Heather. Good presentation. Thank you. Some good feedback. Excellent presentation. From Jill, is there a list of the partners on the website?
Yes. Well, let me back up. List of the participating providers. Yes, that's a part of the application process. So you would go to companies near me. Once you go to the website, there's a tab that says companies near me. You will be able to put in your zip code and you will get a list of participating providers that's in your area. You'll be able to choose which one you would like, contact them, and then they should be able to give you some guidance from there.
Excellent. Another question, it's going to come in a couple formats, but basically, what are there available materials that can help either our employment networks or others in helping households determine their eligibility? Seems like a critical program component. How do folks figure out program eligibility?
That's another tab on the website. Okay, so on the website, there's a graph, a really easy to use graph that will help households determine if they meet that eligibility income portion. I find it very helpful. I wouldn't know where my income lands on the federal poverty guidelines any more than anyone else would. So this chart will help with that portion of the eligibility criteria. There's also additional resources on the website that will help households determine if they're eligible for the ACP program. I would suggest if you're helping folks or if you're getting this information out to folks that you think could benefit, just take a look at the website. And the website should answer some of your questions. If after you're looking at the website and you still have questions, feel free to send me an email and I'll be more than willing to help you out with any additional information that you need.
Great. Thanks, Chantel. And a final question really on the providers from the there's two. They're kind of the same question a little bit. Is the discount provided applicable to any internet company the household may find? And then the second one was a comment. I was told only two T-Mobile and Metro PCFs give the phone discount. Are there others? Mm-hmm. So what are the actual technology providers that are participating?
Okay. So there's a lot of word of mouth information about any program, right? Any resource that's out there. I would suggest, again, going to the website. So the participating providers, once you click on that tab and you put in your zip code or your county and state, you will be able to see all of the providers that are offering the ACP program in your area. Okay. Once you select one of those providers, then you will be able to contact them and they will give you further instructions about the types of plans that they have, and you'll be able to decide which plan best meets your need. If a provider is not on that list, more than likely, they are not participating in that program. But if you still want to get, confirmation, nothing is stopping households from contacting their current provider or provider that they're, you know, thinking of and asking, hey, are you guys participating in the Affordable Connectivity Program? And the provider should be able to tell you whether or not they are and what those offers may be.
Thanks, Chantel. And our final question from Joe, are disability-rated military veterans eligible?
I would definitely go to, I hate to keep saying this, but go to the website and see what it says specifically for veterans pension. I know that iCriteria kind of mentions that, but to me, it was a little vague or it can seem a little vague. So what I would do is specifically, if it doesn't say specifically what you or someone else participates in, then you can definitely give the ACP Support Center a phone call. And that number is in the resource part of my presentation. And you can ask them, hey, am I eligible by participating in whatever it is that, you know, your program is officially called. Sometimes it's hard to meet up those titles with what we have on our website and what you're actually participating in. But when all else fails, the answer is to ask a question, just to ask the question to the right folks, and they should be able to get you the correct answer.
Excellent. A couple more comments, but of appreciation from folks for your presentation and your time, and most importantly for the program that you all run to get access to more people. So with that, Chantel, well, thank you very much for your collaboration with Social Security and all of us today, and we'll now move forward with the presentation. We welcome you to stay with us if you like.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. I'm now pleased to turn to our next segment for EN updates and reminders. For this portion, we will re-welcome Dr. Kara Kaplan, Branch Chief of the Office of Employment Support, for the EN updates and reminders.
Hi again, everybody. I just wanted to give you some reminders and updates. So first of all, sharing your ticket portal access. It surprises me. We've found this a lot lately. All EN personnel that needs access to the portal must complete the required training, including obtaining suitability clearance and a MySSA account with extra security. Do not share your portal accounts with anyone. This is a misrepresentation of your identity. to the federal government. So that's a big no-no. We don't share the ticket portal with anybody. And also, on a side note, they can then gain access to all your Social Security personal information. This isn't just about your EN. We, as an agency, don't even have access to the ticket portal. So it you should really hold that close. Next, changes to our training curriculum. So as of July 1st, new ticket holder main contacts must complete all 15 training modules. We're finding a lot of people starting and not completing. It really does not take a lot of effort or a long time to do. So it would behoove you to just, you know, do it and get it done. I know sometimes the suitability may take a little longer than we would like and things like that hold us up. And we completely understand that. But we do expect the ENs to do the training and do it expeditiously. And it is in your TPA. For TPA change forms, the agency does prefer changes to your EN to be sent via the form. It's not a requirement, but it definitely makes things easier for both you and for us. It must be signed by the signatory authority. ENs are required to report to EN service at ssa.gov changes in personnel working under their TPA, meaning new hires or people leaving within 24 hours of that change event. And again, that is in your TPA. For email correspondences, please include your name, your PID number, and the state in the subject line of all emails to EN service and to EN development. You will get a quicker processing time. We do distribute the work based on state, so it just saves a little time and you'll get your answers faster. We have recently sent out two Gov delivery messages. One was on August 1st about Find Help and the 2022 APOR updates. So Social Security has updated the APOR data on Find Help. So at your earliest convenience, please review your provider information and report any changes by submitting a TPA change form to EN service at ssa.gov. And then on August 25th, we sent out a reiteration of ticket holder pay stubs and Social Security field offices. The field offices do not have the capacity to handle paper pay stubs any longer. So EN should no longer send or take beneficiary pay stubs to the Social Security offices on behalf of your ticket holders. To reiterate, EN should only submit ticket holder earnings through the portal to the ticket program manager when requesting EN payments. TPM will not accept earnings if they're not associated with the payment request. So earnings that EN submit to Social Security via the ticket portal for payment requests are made available to field offices through Social Security's internal process. So that is a way that we get it to the field office. And you can check that 825 Gov delivery message for the list of preferred methods of reporting your wages. And then also for IWP signatures, EN employee signatures a lot of times are illegible for us. So on the IWP, please make sure they're legible. And we would appreciate if you could print the person's name below the signature. Also, we're currently working on a Gov delivery, which will describe what signatures are acceptable as far as the EN and the beneficiary is concerned. So, and meaning like a wet signature and the specific electronic signature. So please look out for that. And that's all I have. Back to you, Derek.
Thank you very much for the updates. We appreciate your time and calling out these reminders. We do have some questions for Dr. Kaplan that have been placed in the chat and a few hands that have been raised. What I'd ask you to do is to realize that we will have a 30-minute Q&A period that will bring Dr. Kaplan back along with the rest of the team for those questions and answers. In the meantime, they might get answered in the blog chat itself, okay? With that, I'd like to move on, though, to our next presenter who's joined us today. It is now my pleasure to welcome Shannon Offord to the meeting. Shannon is Vice President of Strategic Partnerships and Alliance at Direct Employers Association. With over 25 years of experience in the human resources and online recruitment industry, Shannon uses his industry knowledge to build and maintain relationship with the association's bevy of recruitment, veteran, disability, government, and diversity-focused partners. Shannon will present and then accept questions, rejoining Dr. Kaplan and our other presenters today for the final 30 minutes. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Shannon.
Thank you, Derek, and thank you, everyone, for allowing me a few minutes to actually talk about direct employers and how we are currently working with some of the ENs across the country. So many of you may not be familiar with Direct Employers Association, but we are a nonprofit association of employers. We currently have 990 companies who are part of Direct Employers, primarily from the Fortune 2000. Most of them, when I mean most, 98% of them are federal contractors who have a requirement to hire and retain individuals with disabilities. Direct Employers actually started in 2001. It was started by 14 employers. Initially, the reason Direct Employers was started was to help those 14 companies build tools and technologies to kind of help them reduce some of their dependency on some of the commercial job boards who were out in the market. They just felt like they were paying some of those sites way too much money to basically help them find candidates. And they thought if they joined with other employers that they could build those tools and technologies more cost effectively. So that's the reason Direct Employers started. Kind of fast forward to 2006. I'm not sure if many of you remember, but there was a site that the Employment and Training Administration ran, which was called America's Job Bank, and federal contractors were required to post their jobs to America's Job Bank. That site did go away in 2007 because the Employment and Training Administration decided to no longer fund that site. And when that was going on, Direct Employers members were very concerned because, like I mentioned, they were federal contractors. And basically, they decided that they would meet with ETA and DOL and figure out if they built a solution, could that be an official replacement tool for America's Job Bank? After meeting with ETA, basically, ETA told them, hey, we can't endorse you, but there is an organization which all state workforce agencies belong to, and we would recommend that you meet with them and see if you can form a relationship with them. So we met with them, the National Association of State Workforce Agencies, and through that meeting, there was a decision made that Direct Employers would partner with NASWA and in turn partner with all 50 states to help companies meet their obligations as federal contractors as far as listing their opportunities. And out of that actually came us being able to help our member companies reach out to different organizations that really represented underserved populations, so veterans, individual with disabilities, and other diverse populations. So as part of that, we started sending jobs out to our different partners that are out across the country. So we partner with veteran organizations, we partner with disability organizations. There are several ENs across the country that we partner with very closely. And like I mentioned, part of that is we go out to our members' websites, we scrape or we access their job listings. We send them out to our different partners. The nice thing about these jobs, they are from vetted employers, and the jobs themselves are also vetted. So we look at the job content, we make sure there are no scams, we make sure there are no duplications. We make sure that the jobs are legitimate jobs from employers who are actually looking to hire individuals from the communities that we're going to get their jobs out to. So, as I mentioned, these companies are federal contractors and they do have an obligation to hire individuals with disabilities. So as we know that, or since we know that, we make sure that we are getting their jobs out to organizations who can help them bring in that type of talent. And the nice thing is the next presenter will actually talk about a success story that they've had with some of the job leads that we've been able to provide to her organization. Also as a part of that, we have a tool which is called PRM, so Partner Relationship Manager. And that tool allows our partners to go in and create a profile that our members can go through and look at the different organizations that we partner with, learn more about them. And as part of that, they can decide to reach out directly through this tool. So our members can reach out directly through this tool to these organizations. So they can reach out to an EN and build a relationship outside of just the job listing portion of it. So they can reach out and find out more about the organization. That organization can learn more about them, and then they can really become a true partner of that member company and really become an extension of their recruitment team, which we really like to have happen. I think the jobs piece is awesome because that's a good way for you to get great content and you don't have to go searching for it. And you know that content is solid, good content that you don't have to be concerned if it's a scam, and your job seekers won't have to worry about that either. But I also think that being able to talk to these companies directly is a really good way to make sure that, you know, if you do have candidates and, you know, that company may not have openings at that particular moment, but that's a good way to build a relationship and to maybe funnel candidates to them at some point. So like I mentioned, you can really become an extension of their recruitment team. At some point soon, and I would say soon before the end of the year, there will be an opportunity for any organization, so any partner we have, to reach out to our member companies first through that PRM tool. So right now, that contact is initiated by the member company, but like I mentioned, soon the partner will be able to reach out to that member company first and talk to them about maybe some of the openings that they've seen that have come through the daily emails that we send out to our different partners. And I think that option will allow more of our partners to really network with more of our member companies. And these member companies do opt in to receiving or will opt into receiving that communication. And we do, I just saw a question come through, do we provide leads in Puerto Rico? And the answer is yes. We do work with Puerto Rico very closely. In fact, we actually run their state job bank. So I've actually been down there a few times to meet with them. So yeah, we do provide leads to them. And all this is all free of charge. There's no cost to an EN for participating in this program. The tool basically is paid for by the employers. And the link, just so you, I saw that question come through, it's directemployers.org. And when you get there, there's a partnership page. And if you click on that, it will allow you to fill out information that will come to my team, and we'll be able to talk to you and get you set up as a partner with PRM, and also to receive job leads. And the third part that we do, or we help our members with, so basically we have happy hours where, in this case, an EN could actually give a presentation directly to our member companies. We do two of those per month. And we go out and we talk to our different partners to see who would be willing to do that happy hour for that month. What we're finding through those happy hours is we're getting between 35 to 50 members participating in those. And what we've seen as far as our members reaching out to those partners after the calls, we're getting about between 25 to 40% of those employers who are on those calls reaching back out to the organization who presented. So we're seeing very good response back on those. You know, a lot of our partners have been able to really build some relationships, you know, with some of our employers. And yes, we do. I saw another question come through. We do have job leads that cover Michigan. So we are a national. We have employers who are national and global, really, for that matter. So we'll have job leads for all parts of the country. So I mean, like I mentioned, I think it's a good opportunity to get solid content in your hands and a good opportunity to really be able to network directly with these employers who are looking to hire individuals with disabilities. So with that, I'll turn it back over to Derek. Obviously, feel free to, you know, ask any questions in the Q&A period. But thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Shannon, for your remarks and content regarding Direct Employers Association and your pipeline building between employers and partners. And we look forward to having you back with us in a little bit for the Q&A. We'll now move forward to our next presenter. As Shannon mentioned, one of the direct employers connects with an employment network, and it's my pleasure to introduce Linda Patino, Program Administrator with Advance to Work, a national employment network. Linda has over 28 years of experience assisting individuals with returning to work and career advancement opportunities, and has worked with the ticket program since 2003. Linda will provide us an overview of Advance to Work, include a success story about their work with direct employers, and then we'll return to join Shannon and Kara and Jamie for the Q&A. And with that, over to you, Linda. Thank you.
Thank you, Derek. Hopefully everybody can hear me okay.
Yes, you sound great.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Okay, what I want to do is share from an employment network's point of view on what we experienced. So last year I heard about direct employers and was like, who is this agency? What's this about? How is it going to affect me or my clients? So as you can see, I put together some thoughts that came and concerns that came to my mind being a part of an employment network, because we have to be really careful what we do and how much information we share or don't share. So some of the items, you know, is this a scam? Is it too good to be true to have all of this access at your fingertips? Is there a cost to it? Is there a contract we have to sign or certain obligations? Will this risk my clients or my ticket holders' PII, personal identifiable information? I already send job leads to my ticket holders, so why do I really need this? It might be some duplications. You know, so why do I really need it? And the other concern is I'm a national employment network. So for us, we have to be able to reach our clients in any state or territory that they live in. So would this benefit us in a sense? And is there, you know, is it limited to what we can do? So I'm going to, you know, that was my concerns amongst a few other ones. You know, as you'll see in the next slide, the benefits are going to be there for us. So if you can move it to the next slide. Okay, So things after conversations, I know there was a NENA presentation that one of the employees with direct employers did. I kind of heard bits and pieces of that. I also was in a presentation, I think, that RepPath facilitated, and it actually brought Shannon into the picture. So I'm like, oh, this is legit. So there's no cost. There's no contract. There's no PII risk to an EN. The wonderful thing about this is we get to use their website to look for jobs or receive jobs. So it's going to be some benefit there. We receive daily job leads. We actually do, even on the weekend and some holidays, I get them automatic to my email. And we're able to sort through those. And what we did is when we actually signed up, it was nothing. There was no formal process other than we let them know. They sent us a form to set up our profile on how we would be able to receive the information. What are some of the prime locations. So maybe you only cover certain territories, certain state, or certain big cities. Maybe you cover regional. And what we did is I asked them, I said, is there any way that, because I have four large populated areas that we're serving and they're spread throughout the U.S., they were able to send me those four designated areas on a daily basis. I would get those job leads. That in itself saved me a lot of time doing all the research that I was doing on jobs, trying to find something that was legitimate, matched my clients, meet their needs. And then being on a national, it was still like, okay, well, I've got those targeted areas where I'm heavily populated with ticket holders. But what about all the rest of them? How can I use this to get those job leads to those individuals? So, you know, in conversations and through a little research, I was able to go directly to the site. And you put in the city, the state, the distance, the county, what type of work, even remote jobs, you can do the searches based on that. So we have one person on our staff that goes through daily, getting those listings, sending them out, and making sure it's getting to the clients, the ticket holders, so that they can look through them and apply. Now, the other really big bonus it's been for us is to be able to market to ticket holders and say, we have access to millions of jobs on a daily basis that we filter out based on what your needs are, where you live, and the type of jobs that you're looking for. So that's how we do the search. It's based on the criteria that meets their individual work plan. So if their short-term goal is to do warehouse, we're going to look for those warehouse jobs in the area that they're located at and get the information to them. The cool thing about it is if they look at the job listing, which is very easy to follow, easy to read, they click on it. Click apply at the big button, apply for that job. It goes directly to the employer site and follow the directions and they can apply for those jobs. There's no ads. There's no spam that they get to their emails. It's something that they truly can benefit from being able to get directly to the get the jobs to the individuals and for them to be able to get directly to that employer. So I love the way it works. I regret that I didn't start it sooner last year. I had all these questions. If anybody knows me, they know I'm a what if person. So I will look through every possibility of what could be the pros or cons, and then I take it if it's a good thing. This will actually, using it as a marketing process too, whenever I have ticket holders call, say, well, we have access to these millions of jobs, we'll filter through it, we'll get that information to you. So it's a plus for us, but also then once we do get that information to them, it reinforces that relationship we're building with them, that they can trust what we're doing, that we're going to get the information to them and help them get a job. So if we can go to the next slide, please. Now, the ticket holder benefits, they receive more quality jobs. And like Shannon said, they're vetted. These are employers that's vetted jobs, so you know that they're legit. So they receive quality jobs. In turn, this will build the trust and the relationship between the ticket holder and the EN. There's no ads, no junk, spam related to it. And that is a huge plus because the ticket holders call us all the time and say, we don't like getting all that spam in our emails. It's just frustrating. I'm tired of looking for jobs because of that. So like I had mentioned to Shannon, they love it that they could just click apply and go to that site and not have to deal with all of the junk mail. Also, there's more opportunity for success because of the quality jobs. So if we can go to the next slide. Overall benefits to the EN and ticket holder. Like I say, marketing for the EN, access to millions of quality jobs daily. The EN staff time, it's less time searching for jobs and more time helping that ticket holder, helping them with a resume, helping them with the interviews, helping them with their benefit planning and guidance so that they could truly benefit from these programs. We still do other search, but this is a way to get that information to them on a regular basis. We receive leads from the direct employers daily for those targeted areas. And like I said, they also have reached out to us and say, here's an area that we need help in. Can you find anyone? So we are working with them on trying to find and identify clients in that area. Ticket holder satisfaction. Receive a constant flow of quality job opportunities, builds their confidence that the EN can help them find work. And we have success stories. So leading to our next slide, I'm going to share one of my success stories. Not many of us can say that we hit our dream job right off the bat, but this is what happened in the situation. I had a young man that had contacted us, 26 years old, lives in the LA area, so kind of lost in the shuffle. There's a huge population there. He's been on SSI since a youth. He was in and out of trouble throughout his life with his disability issues, living in LA. There was no support system. But the other thing is he did not get to complete his high school diploma. He completed 11th grade. So how was I going to be able to get this kid to where he needed to be? He was looking for that dream job if possible, but willing to take whatever he could to get that door open. And he had the passion. He had volunteered in different places trying to help his friends with AV technician. That's what he wanted to be, audio visual technician. He took a few classes at the local college. That was in line with what his goal was. He enrolled in the Ticket to Work program in March of 2022. We helped him with developing a resume based on his volunteer experience and the education. And we found doing some search through the direct employer and actually some of those leads they were giving us daily, we found an AV tech position and sent that over to him. It was going to be a part-time, and that was only a week or so after he enrolled in the program. Next slide. So he applied and was scheduled for an interview by March 24th. Again, this is in the same month that he enrolled in the program. They scheduled him for a second interview, which was closer to where he lived because they really liked his attitude. And on April 7th, he had that second interview. He was told that they had not opened their door for anyone for 4 years. However, they wanted to give him a chance since they seen that he had such passion in the industry, and they offered him a full-time, not part-time, full-time AV tech position with their agency. They had to do the background check, so he had to wait for the process. He happily started that position. This was his dream job on May 2nd. We helped him with some clothing, helped him with gas, and he was, I'm happy to say he's still working with them. We communicate on a regular basis. He tells me that he knows that this was a once-in-a-lifetime position, that he loves what his employer is helping him with. They're guiding him and molding him into what he needs to do to stay in that industry and grow. He's working at the convention way at the downtown Disney LA area, where he manages or helps with conventions and concerts and various hotels that are in that area. So I just wanted to share his story, and just a note also, it's based on this partnership. I would not have had that job probably to give him if I didn't have that partnership with direct employers. And by the way, he's making $3,000 to $4,000 on a monthly basis with benefits. So I am so happy that I could share that story of this individual. He's been working since he started in May and doing well. So I think that's it. You want to go to the next slide? And that's my contact information if you have more questions. So I will send it back to you, Derek.
Linda, thank you very much for the overview of Advance to Work, and importantly, this testimonial about the value that you found through your partnership with the folks at Shannon's team at Direct Employers Association. So we've just posted Linda's email address in chat, lpatino@advancetowork.com, we'll continue to share that in the slide deck that we post online after the event. So thank you very much to Linda for providing us this informative overview, and we'll have you back shortly. It is now my pleasure to move to our next segment to talk about Ticket to Work program outreach. We look forward to now having Jamie Pendergraf, our Ticket Program Manager, Director of Communications and Outreach, provide some outreach updates. Jamie, over to you.
Thank you, Derek. This is Jamie, and thank you for that warm welcome. I'll give some updates about the outreach program. So, as many of you know, our outreach team works to promote the Ticket to Work program to eligible beneficiaries through a variety of channels, and today I am going to talk a little bit about those. First and foremost are our WISE webinars. These are monthly national call webinars that are held on typically on the fourth Wednesday of every month, and they are designed to be a fully accessible learning opportunity for people to get more information about the ticket program and works. We usually see about 400 to 600 people attend every month. We have around 700 folks registered for next week's webinar, which is titled Receiving Social Security Disability Benefits While You Work, What You Need to Know. This webinar is scheduled for September 28th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern. We invite you all to attend, but we also invite you all to share our social media about it. And if you're a provider in ITOPS, you received an email that sent some sample social media posts. We encourage you to share those with your audiences on Facebook and Twitter. This is a list of all of our upcoming webinars. After September, our next webinar will be How Will Work Affect My Medicare or Medicaid? And as you all know, that is a very hot topic. We'll be talking about work incentives that help protect those benefits and answering that question about how earnings from work will have an impact on those. In November, we're going to talk about working from home with Ticket to Work. We've seen this one become a very, very popular topic, especially since the pandemic and people looking to work remotely. And we give some tips and advice on how to be successful working from home. And then for the end of the year, as people are trying to make those New Year's resolutions, we're going to talk about setting goals with Ticket to Work. We identify SMART goals as they relate to the ticket program, the job search, and then once you're on the job. Choose Work social media. I hope that many of you are following our social media accounts. I will get to those in just a minute, but we do schedule normally daily or twice daily social media posts on Facebook and Twitter, and we highlight our blog posts, ticket program resources and fact sheets, our webinars, our success stories, any major updates from Social Security or other federal agencies, and then other relevant information from other federal agencies. We'll also provide content that is relevant to Disability Awareness Months or particular themes like Hispanic Heritage Month, which is from September 15th to October 15th. Anytime you all have any suggestions or resources that you think we'd like to share from our social media pages, please do reach out. We're always looking for content. And vice versa, we encourage you to also share our social media posts from our social media accounts. Our fact sheets. We also publish fact sheets. They provide information about the program and other work incentives. This month, since we are talking about an intro to Social Security, we encourage you to share what is Social Security's Ticket to Work program. It's a basic intro and overview to the program. And again, we encourage you to utilize those fact sheets. You can print them out if you're in your office, or you can share them on social media. And we're happy to provide you with content if you do need it. Our success stories are some of my favorites. Success stories are a way to humanize the program and put a face on it and showcase real people who have gone through the program. As Linda shared, you know, there's nothing more powerful than a success story. It's always good to hear different stories from folks. So we have two different types of success stories. One features individuals who have achieved financial independence with the help of Ticket. So this means that they are off benefits and have been for some time. And then we also have stepping stone stories. And these are folks who have made a major step on the path to independence, but they're still on benefits. So these are people who maybe have made a big purchase, like bought a home, or they have gotten a degree or a high school diploma along with the Ticket program. So some sort of interaction with Ticket, but they're not quite off of benefits yet, but they're on their way. This month, we'd like to talk a little bit about Shirley. Shirley does have narcolepsy and depression, and she worked hard to get both of those under control. And when she did it, she knew that she wanted to go back to work, and she turned to an employment network. She worked with America Works to return to work, and the benefits counselor there worked closely with her and helped her understand how those earnings from work would affect her benefits. And that allowed her to focus on finding a job. And so we encourage you to check out and share Shirley's story this month. How can you share success stories? So this is really a tip for how you can share anything on the website. You can share them on social media. You can become familiar with the stories. And if you have a ticket holder with a similar background, you can share with them. Taking Shirley's example, somebody with narcolepsy may not see how they can go back to work because who knows, maybe it's not possible for them. But if they hear Shirley's story, maybe that'll help encourage them and show that it's potentially a possibility. All of our success stories are available online. And if you do want any sample social media posts for any of this, or if you have any ideas for us, please shoot an email to socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. And I do encourage you to keep in touch. This is all of our social media. We are on Facebook at Choose Work. We're on Twitter at Choose Work SSA. We do have a YouTube channel. Our Gov Delivery updates are where you're going to get most of the information. You can subscribe to the Gov Delivery updates by going to the contact page on Choose Work and selecting what you want to learn about. There is a webinar subscription list, a blog subscription list, and many others. As service providers, many of you are on several lists already, so you do get messages, but I do encourage you to take a look and subscribe to those specific lists so you're not missing anything. And again, you can always send us an email at socialmedia@choosework.ssa.gov. And Derek, I believe now we are back to you.
Yes, thank you very much, Jamie. Appreciate the outreach updates. And as I mentioned, this now concludes our presentation portion of this Olli-Ann call, and we're going to transition now to an open Q&A period. And for that, if we can move to the next slide, I just want to provide a couple reminders for you as we ask our presenters to come back with their audio and visual on. As a reminder, to ask a question over the phone, please raise your hand on Teams by dialing *5. And if you are called upon, then we will unmute you, but you will need to press *6 to unmute yourself. So it is a two-step process. For participants joining via the Teams app, please enter your question and we could or identify by raising your hand and we can unmute you there. So we've had some questions and comments going back and forth inside of chat, but now we'd like to bring up a couple. And I'm going to ask my colleague, Nicole. Nicole, have you been able to identify our first raise hand?
Yes, I have, Derek. Thank you. We currently have 3 raised hands, and I will announce the first question is with Joe Tarshish. Joe, your mic has been enabled, so you can go ahead on the top of your screen or the bottom of your screen, look for the mute button and unmute yourself.
I have a beneficiary who is self-employed, and I had sent her check stubs from her customers who paid her for her work to the help desk in line with putting in my request for payments for milestones, only to be told that they cannot honor my request because the person did not fill out her IRS income tax for the year. And what I'm confused about is IRS law or ruling says that if someone makes less than $14,000 in a given year, they do not have to fill out an income tax. And here I'm being told that she has to in order for me to receive my payment. Is that the logic we really want to follow here?
Thanks for the question, Joe. Maybe Kara be able to.
And Katie can pop in too because she's the payments manager. So, but is this person self-employed?
Correct.
Right. So that has always been the policy of SSA that if a person, it's nothing new, it's been going on for 20 years. If a person is self-employed, that we do not make payments until we receive the tax returns for that year, because we need to be insured that they did pay their taxes and that they did make over the amount, because a lot of times people take a lot of deductions and then their income is lowered and they don't make SGA or they don't make trial work level.
Well, I understand where you're coming from. And even with sending in certified letters, the beneficiary stated how much she made and what her expenses and what her net income were on a given month, even with that information, doesn't work.
No, Katie, do you want to chime in? I mean, that's our policy.
Yeah, and I was just going to chime in, you know, and we can certainly discuss this offline. Joe, I know we've been trying to get together, but I actually had the flu last week, and we will connect. But, you know, if you think about it, right, the Ticket to Work program is funded by the trust funds, right? It's a taxpayer funded program. So we have to make sure that we're spending the funds, right, the taxpayer funds on people, you know, who have filed a tax return, if you think about it that way too, right? So, you know, this is just us, like Kara said, you know, staying with a policy that's always been in place. So, but we can certainly have a one-on-one conversation about it.
Okay. If you can call me, I'm available.
Yeah, I will. I'm sorry. Like I said, I've been sick and I did. You have not wanted to listen to me talk for the past week.
I hear you.
Now. Thank you for the question, Joe. Thank you, Katie right. and Kara. I appreciate that. Circle back over to Nicole. Nicole, do you have a next question lined up?
Yes, I do. We have two questions. This is the first of two. Sandra Abbott, you have been taken off of mute. Please unmute yourself to enable your microphone. Okay, we will come back to Sandra. I'm going to go ahead and bring up Lauren Womack. Lauren, you have been unmuted on my end. Please unmute your microphone.
Hi, I think Jan and Katie were attempting to answer it, but we're a workforce, Ian, and we don't submit the paper pay stubs to the portal. Will we still get our funding through ePay if nobody is taking the paper pay stubs at the Social Security office?
Hi, so let me just make sure I clarify, you know, I think a lot of people get having getting confused by the, you know, the message we're trying to send about the pay stubs. What we're trying to stop is double effort. You know, we don't want a ticket holder to send their pay stubs to the field office and then an EN send the same pay stubs to the Ticket to Work program, right? Because you are, and then to the field office. So we're trying to stop like the double work. The ticket holders are expected to submit their pay stubs to the field office. That has not changed. That requirement has not changed and is not going to change. What we're saying is ENs, you do not need to go to that extra effort to submit pay stubs to the field office if you're already submitting them to SSA via the ticket portal. We're trying to say if you send them to SSA, yeah, we're trying to say if you send them to SSA in the ticket portal, you've done your part. Yeah. As a workforce, okay, Nothing has really changed, right? Like we haven't changed, just to be clear, we have not changed ePay. We've not changed the way the portal works. We've not changed the way the field offices worked. We've just said, hey, you know, you actually by reporting to us are reporting to the field office. We're actually kind of hoping to save everybody some time and some effort.
And can I ask a follow-up question to that, please? So, because I advise all my ticket holders, I show them how to report. We do it online if they can do it like that, or over the phone
That's great.
To try to get them responsible into doing that. And I'm sure that they can do it. That shouldn't affect anything, you know, if they do it.
That's great. Thank you for doing that. I mean, that's what our message was trying to encourage, is like help your ticket holders, you know, get their wages electronically to the field office. That's going to help everyone. So thank you for that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. I'm going to circle back. We had Sandra online to try to unmute. Sandra identified in chat that her microphone wasn't unmuting, but Nicole, let's give that one more try.
The microphone has been enabled on this end.
Sandra, if you're able to unmute yourself on your end. If not, we would encourage you to provide your question in chat because it looks like you're connected through the web. Nicole, do we have any other callers at this time?
Not at this time. There are no additional questions in the queue.
Okay, thank you. There have been a couple of questions dropped in chat. I'll go back a little bit and we'll bring those up. I did have a question for Shannon, and Shannon's camera's off, but I wanted to bring it up. Somebody went to the direct employer's website. I think they were enticed by the two presentations today. They wanted to know, how do I sign up? Is Shannon Offord still with us?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me, Derek?
I can hear you. Go ahead, Shannon.
Perfect. So if at the very top, if you go to directemployers.org, at the very top of that page, there'll be a partnership link. If you click that partnership link, then there'll actually be a drop down there. It'll give you an option for diversity partnerships or veteran partnerships. If you click on diversity partnership, it'll take you to another place. It'll say, let's talk. And if you click that, this is a little bit confusing. If you click that, it'll then take you to another area that'll say, let's chat. And then from there, it'll allow you to put your information in. And once you do that, it'll go to someone on my team and they will reach out to you within 24 to 48 hours.
Excellent. Thanks, Shannon, for clarifying the steps there. And your Linda, your partner, dropped in that diversity partnerships link. So if somebody wanted to, they could figure out how to get to Let's Talk, Let's Chat, and then set up a meeting with Shannon's team. Appreciate that. Okay, moving back to chat, here's a question from Justin. What is the reason for having to do the module trainings for parts of the process that should have come before access to those module trainings? Any comment on that from Kara?
I think Natalie reached out to him to reach out to her directly. So, because that could take a while. So,
okay, great.
You could get in touch, if you can email Ian Service attention to Natalie, and she can discuss this with you.
Thank you, Kara. I see the response. I was too busy flying through the different chat and I missed it.
Oh, no worries.
There's a comment here that I've been waiting 6 months for the verification by IRS. Participant filed in February 2022, and I also paid taxes, all current. Sometimes there's comments here. What we're looking for is framed as questions. So I think this is more about experience.
Yeah, and I mean, we have no control over what another agency does or how fast they work. It's when it comes to us, and we just have to follow our policy.
There is a question that Sandra, who is trying to unmute, has posted in chat just now. Can you go over, please, about the pay stubs and beneficiary submitting them? Pay stub beneficiary submission process is the question.
Katie, I'll let you handle that one.
Now, I apologize. I was trying to multitask and do questions in the chat. Can you say the question one more time?
It's floated up when we go back to it. Can you please go over about pay stubs and how beneficiaries should be submitting them?
They can Brady, can you please repost that in the entire blast in the chat? That is the gov delivery message we sent out. We'll post it in the chat. Probably more useful than me reading it off to you.
And aren't the gov deliveries posted on the Cognizant on the website?
They should be.
Jamie, let me bring you in. I want to make sure that we answer that with confidence.
Yeah, it might. If so, which I think they should be, it might be easier to just post a link versus the whole chat, which is going to go away in seconds as more people ask questions.
Brittany, I need the. Sorry, we don't have the whole gov delivery. The bottom of the gov delivery has the actual details. So, and I don't want to read something wrong that isn't the posted information.
Thank you, Katie and Kara. Jamie Pendergraph, I know you're still on. Can we bring you up? Do those gov delivery messages get posted on the website?
This is Jamie. So some of them do and some of them don't. Our more general announcements do get published on the website. So things like the WISE announcements or a blog announcement or something like that are going to be there. But then things like an invitation to this call or other things that are more private for service providers do not get posted on the website.
Okay, so thank you for that. So in this case, it's uncertain right now if that's on the website or not. So we'll have to double check that. If Social Security asks us to, we'll get that posted there. And then Sandra, you could follow up for those details. Circle back to Nicole just to make sure, but I don't think we have any hands raised. Nicole, anyone with their hand raised right now?
No, sir. There are no additional hands raised.
Okay, thank you. We do have about 6-7 minutes available. If anyone has a question, we do urge you to raise your hand. If not, you can continue to submit in chat and we will have folks try to respond if I don't ask them the question right at the same time. Sorry about that, Katie. There's a question that came in. I'm going back up just a little bit. I fax clients pay stubs into the field office for the client. Should I continue this for the client? You know, this is a recurring theme. I just want to be able to get an answer. Katie, do you want to answer that one?
Yeah, that kind of does tie. You know, we do encourage ENs to help your ticket holders use the electronic methods that we have that I'm trying so hard to find so I can read it off to you. We do, you know, encourage you to use electronic methods we have available to try to get them, like a prior caller said, to help them report things electronically. But if there is no other option but to physically take pay stubs to the office and the ticket holder is not going to do it, then yes, of course. You know, we do not want, you know, to limit that, but.
Thank you, Katie. Appreciate that. We do have a question. How do you sign up for Gov Delivery? If we could have somebody drop that link inside of chat, that would help folks who aren't currently receiving it get to that site and add themselves. Kim asks, can we use electronic methods for SSDI recipients? Is that needing more information?
Katie, you may know better. Like, I know there is definitely more availability for SSI recipients than for SSDI beneficiaries. And I'm not sure, Katie, do you know the exact methods that are available for Title II?
Yeah, so it just got posted up on the chat. It is going to disappear as people keep typing. But the Title II is creating a My SSA account. That is the only electronic option we have at this time for Title II. For Title 16, we have the option of using the mobile wage reporting app, which is a smartphone app that is SSI only. And then we have the automated toll-free SSI telephone wage reporting service. And then the phone number is in the chat if everyone can, which there was to highlight that for you. So those are the methods.
And somebody's asking what Title II and Title 16 are, so I apologize. So Title II is SSDI, and Title 16 is SSI.
Thank you very much. As Katie said, that was posted in chat, those three options, and that was posted by Brittany. So if you look up in chat, find Brittany, it's slightly larger print for those searching that. Jamie Pendergraf has also posted the Gov Delivery link. If you want to sign up for that, that's in chat, just a few posts up. Thank you.
And I do want to interject, Derek. Like you said, you know, we are talking about this pay stub Gov Delivery message went out and you have not seen it and you don't know anything about it, please do reach out once we post that so you can get on our Gov Delivery list. We send out a lot of important information via that method. So we want to make sure you have everything that you need so we can be successful partners together. Thanks, Derek.
Thank you, Katie. Brittany's also posted that she has now pinned the wage reporting information at the top of the chat. So if you don't want to search through, just go to the top of the chat. I'll circle back to Nicole just to check if there's any other questions that are coming in.
No, sir, no additional questions have come in.
Thank you, Nicole. Diane's asked, are those reporting methods in one place somewhere? When I click on the link in chat, it only pulls up a way to sign up for the site. So I think that's the guidance that we want to ensure that the full delivery message is posted somewhere in a public space. So if it's not currently, we'll be working with Kara and her team to figure out how to provide that somewhere as a follow-up.
And just to clarify, Stacy's asking that SSDI beneficiaries can report electronically. So as Katie said, only through the MySSA account. So they need to sign up for a MySSA account, and then they can report their wages through that methodology.
Thank you, Kara. Kara, there's another post that just came up in the blog. Addressed to you. Take a moment if you'd like to read that. It says, did you mention that there would be additional guidance coming regarding IWP signatures? Would that be different info coming than making sure the signatures are legible and included a printed name as well?
Yeah, we could add that to it. That's just a thing where we're getting a lot of IWPs and we can't read who from your office actually signed it. So that's not good. So we just would like people to be careful to be legible when they make the signatures, and it'd be really helpful if you could print the names under it. Just, you don't have to do anything formal, just, you know, write out in print form what your name is underneath your signature. The blast has to do with this. A lot of people have been asking lately about, do you accept this electronic signature or that electronic signature from the beneficiaries / ticket holders. So it's just going to clarify the type of signatures that we will accept from the ticket holders.
Thank you very much. A couple other items just came in. When we have people sign up for mySSA.gov site, I got to go back to it, the post, sorry, to report pay stubs, I get told that they cannot upload pay stubs until employment is recorded by SSA. I don't know if that's one we want to bring Katie back in for.
I have to say, hi, I will try my best. I can put my email back out there and reply to that one. You know, if you have some kind of technical issue, I can try to help you and connect you with someone who can help you get that resolved. We don't personally here in the Ticket to Work program, you know, we don't manage the MySSA website, but I can certainly try to help you out with this issue.
Thank you very much. Kara, we have another one addressed to you. We recently were informed by a beneficiary at the local field office stopped allowing them to report wages via mySSA.gov after they completed the TWP. Is this correct and a standard procedure?
We would have to take that back. I couldn't tell you if it's correct. You have to remember the field office is a totally separate component from us. So I would have to verify that with them.
So best guidance there is to perhaps send an email to EN Service and then it could be followed up on?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks, Derek.
Great. Thank you very much. Just check. We're winding up our time. There's a couple other comments. I'll see if there's a final question before we go to wrap up.
Oh, and Katie, they're asking where ePay gets their information from. So it's various sources. It's not just IRS. We don't wait a year to get the records. We get it from the Office of Child Support and from the monthly earnings that are submitted. Is there anything else, Katie?
So I think that was Katie confirming that that's correct.
So we do have monthly and quarterly wage reports that we use. We don't wait for the end of year from the IRS.
No, we use for EM payments, we prioritize it based on the earnings we have available at the time. Monthly is prioritized over quarterly, which is prioritized over yearly. So. And we use all those different earning sources to determine whether or not you should get a payment.
Great. Thank you very much. I'd like to take this moment to thank our presenters. that have been with us today, to sharing their information, and then, of course, sticking with us for the Q&A session. Dr. Kara Kaplan, Katie Streibinger, Shannon Offord, Linda Patino, and Jamie Pendergraf. It's been great working with you and appreciate your time on the All-EN call. If we could go to the next slide, please. Looking ahead, we'll have the next All-EN call in the new year, slated for January 2023, on a date that will be determined. As always, we encourage you to submit topics for the All-EN call. Please email enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Again, the next All-EN call will be in January. It would have been scheduled in December, but that quarterly cycle conflicts with many holidays, and so we'll avoid that by selecting a date in January. If you have topics, we encourage you to submit them to enoperations@yourtickettowork.ssa.gov. Thank you for attending the All-EN call. We appreciate your time, and this concludes the meeting.